The Free Library of Philadelphia is proud to present a podcast from our author event series, recorded live at the Central Library on the Benjamin Franklin Parkway. To learn more about the Free Library, the Central Library Expansion Project, and how your contribution can help our programs and services for the community, please visit freelibrary.org. Please welcome Kristen Chenoweth and Tamala Edwards.
I told Kristen coming out here, I said, there's no better crowd than the crowd at the Free Library, literate, cultured, fun. You're going to have a good time.
Okay.
Though I must say, you know, I'm reminded of a scene in her book where her friend Denny does not want to fly with her because if they die, he's like, and then I'll just be in others. When you come out with Kristen Chenoweth, it's Kristen Chenoweth and others.
It's true.
And in case there happens to be one or two people out there who don't know what kind of talent, what kind of voice we're dealing with, thankfully, I asked her backstage, so she's going to do something special, which is to sing a few bars so you know why the voice is so beloved.
My parents lived in Philadelphia, outside of Philadelphia, for 10 years. So this song I dedicate to you all. You'll never know just how much I miss you. You'll never know just how much I care. And if I tried, I still couldn't hide my love for you. For haven't I told you so a million or more times? You went away and my heart went with you. I speak your name in my every prayer. If there is some other way to prove that I love you, I swear I don't know how. You'll never know if you don't know. Thank you. Thank you.
Well, geez. I think maybe we can just all go home. Just buy a book.
Thank you.
Well, in your book, Wicked, a little bit wicked, you describe a lot about your growing up, and you seem to come from a great family in Oklahoma. You're flying out there later today. But somebody really important to you was Florence Birdwell.
Yes.
Who, you know, you end up going to a school you didn't think you were going to go to. You walk into her studio and you go, I've got to go to this school.
Yes.
What was the difference in your voice before? Because you thought you were slamming, you were perfect.
Oh, yeah.
And after she got done with you.
Well, I remember auditioning for the scholarship at OCU and my dad was with me and she was the only teacher available to be in the audition. And I sang Matchmaker from Fiddler because I'm so right for the part. And then I thought, well, I'll really kill her with New York, New York, complete with, you know, jazz squares and jazz hands. And after I got done, this was, you know, I grew up in Oklahoma in a tiny town, so I was kind of the deal there. So when I got done and I hit my big, big note, she said, I can't wait to teach you how to sing. And of course I was devastated. And then she said, no, no, no. You are naturally gifted, and I'm going to hone you. I'm not going to teach you how to sing just from here, but from here. And this would be the woman that would really change my life. I did have these high notes as a child, but I also grew up singing country music and gospel music, and she definitely opened it up enough for me to get a master's degree in opera. So I write about her a lot in the book because she is my person, if you will.
You also, at some point, you're getting really sick, and you're told have your tonsils out, but your voice could change. And like, we all hear things like Freddie Mercury won't get his teeth fixed because his voice could change.
Right.
What gave you the courage to do that versus, no, I'm keeping what I got?
Oh, that's a... Nobody's ever asked me that question. What gave me the courage was I was constantly getting tonsillitis. And I remember being in master class in a room much like this is where we all get together and we sing an aria or something and then we all critique each other. And, of course, Florence has the last word. And I remember I was singing Pietà Signore. And I kept looking out the window of the door because I wasn't focused because my throat hurt so bad. And she said, what is so interesting out the door? And I was like, I don't know. So she started again. And, of course, when someone tells you you can't do something, you keep doing it. I kept looking out the window. And she goes, what is so? And then she said, you may sit down because you're boring me. And I sat down and I immediately started crying. I said, I can't swallow. And after going to the doctor, finding out I needed to get my tonsils out, they said your voice could go up or it could stay the same or you could lose some high notes. And at that point, I just wanted to have a voice. And she's the one that said, you will do this. And, of course, then she called the anesthesiologist and said, you have the voice of the century in your hands. Do not cram anything down that throat. And then she made me write Singer before surgery on my head to remind them. And, of course, my top note is now an F. It went up by two notes.
Yeah, so you got something good out of it.
Something good happened.
I've seen interviews with you, and in the book, you're adopted, and yeah. You have a great family. And you say, you know, I just really have no desire to know all this other stuff out there. So you've already talked about that. What I was interested in is, and there's a scene in the book where you are a beauty pageant contestant. A woman comes up to get an autograph, and somebody else says, Christy, that woman looks just like you. Mm-hmm. This woman was very emotional in meeting you. What if she came back to you and wanted to get to know you?
If she came back to me, I would say, sure. I mean, if it comes into my life, I'm not going to go, no, get away. I'm not going to do that. But if it walked into my life, of course, I would say, who sings? Who battles depression? Who's the shrimp? You know?
Yeah.
There's things I would like to know, but none of those things really define who I am. I mean, if you met my family, although they're chemical engineers and very tall and right-brained and I'm the oddball, you would go, of course she's theirs. You know, she acts like them. A little. They're not as crazy as me. But... yeah, I would welcome it, and I would have some questions for her. But I have such a great, you know, family that it's not something that desire hasn't been like, you must find your genes. I know a little bit. I know that I have some Cherokee Indian, a lot of Cherokee Indian in me, and then the rest is like Texas mutt. So, you know. What
the blonde tribe of Cherokees.
Feathers, not dots. Not that there's anything wrong with dots, by the way.
Let's talk a little bit about your career. For many people, a breakthrough is getting their own show. Mm-hmm. Been on Broadway, you know where we're going. In the book, she makes a lot of fun of... Of course you saw Kristen. It was a massive hit.
You were the one!
So your show, Kristen, comes out, and you really kind of get jerked around by the network. The guy who wanted to make it ends up leaving. Mm-hmm. Jeff Zucker comes in and goes, I'm not feeling it.
Yeah.
How do you deal with that? You haven't talked to the guy who made it. He disappeared.
Yeah.
And you just got to kind of pick yourself up. How do you do it?
Well, Jeff Zucker called and said, look, I'm not really into, I love you. I'm not really into the show, but would you like to host, what's that show where you suck, leave, that reality show? Like, you are the weakest link. And I was like, really, Jeff? You want me to be the host of The Weakest Link? I'd be like, you're not so bad. I love your hair. I'd be the worst host of that show. But he did say, I want you on the network. I'm just not, this isn't my style. It's not. It wasn't his baby. And I respect. I'm getting ready to work for him again. So, and I worked for him for on the West Wing. So I love the man. But I do always say, you did cancel Kristen. It was very scary to have it be called Kristen. I was like, can't we call it like short and sweet? The long and short of it. Sweet and low. Anything. Anything but Kristen. But that's what they decided. You have to, when things like that come your way, and you get a great opportunity, which, by the way, I'm very proud. I make fun of it in the book. But I'm very, very proud of that show. A, I learned a lot. B, I made a lot of money for me. At the time, I was like, what? They wouldn't pay me what? I mean, I'd been on Broadway, you know? So I have to say that it was a great... Who gets an opportunity to be on national TV and learn about a four-camera show and sitcom? And I look back now and I watch the shows recently and I think some of it was really good. And I'm really... And I'm proud of it. I'm proud of it.
And
thank you.
You just mentioned the various ways that Jeff Zucker has made it up to you, but I was struck in the book when you finally meet him, you hug him, which I thought was very big of you because I wouldn't have hugged him. Where did you find the courage for that?
Because I think, you know what, Tam, as we know, like change of regime, it's like you might as well go with it. What you know, I'm sad that the man that loved me before left, but Jeff did say, you know, I'm going to offer you this other job, of course, again. I love your shoes. You were the weakest link. Get off. I would be bad. He clearly didn't know me. But I just thought, what a hard job he must have. I don't always succeed at this, but I do try to look at the other person's view and go, how hard it must be. Of course, he said, I'm going to put on this show about people eating bugs and surviving, and I said, oh, well, good luck. Have fun with that. Skip to 7 years, right. You know, there it was.
There is another show that you have been involved in, and I loved it, and so all I can say is, what the heck happened with Pushing Daisies? That was an amazing show.
Thank you. Here's my theory, and I haven't thought about it at all. Number one, I think that it was very, very different. When I read the script, I knew it was either going to be too good for television or it was going to be too good for television. And I didn't know which way it was going to go. It looked like nothing else. You had to pay attention. It's not just given to you on a silver platter. And those shows are great, too. You kind of had to stay with it. It had a very interesting premise. We had a writer's strike, and I don't think a lot of shows came back after the writer's strike the first season. We did 13 and stopped, so 7 months went by before we aired again, and we had to relaunch the show. I don't feel that our network did as much of a launch that second season than they did the first season, and I also think that we were on too early. On Wednesday nights at 8 o'clock, I don't know about you guys, but I'm not home. And TiVo is very tricky to count. And people who, as far as ratings, and people who watch it on the internet doesn't count at all. So our show, I think, was a victim of a lot of things. But as I always say, I'd much rather be a part of something that's quality and maybe it not last. I mean, if you want your show to close, cast me. But hopefully it'll be a quality piece. Except for Wicked, of course. That juggernaut's going to... I'll be dead and that'll think it's going to be wrong.
We'll get to Wicked in just a moment, but you lead into that where I was going next, which is making decisions. Because in the book you talk about some decisions like Wicked that are blockbusters. Others you say, well, I'm going to do this, not that. You always are sort of at a fork in the road.
Yeah.
How do you make your peace with, darn, that woman won a Tony for the thing I didn't do?
Oh, well, like Thoroughly Modern Millie. I wanted to do Kristen instead of Millie because I wanted to do something that I hadn't done before. And I wanted to learn and grow as an artist. And I never take jobs for the money, although, like I said, I was shocked when I got the check. But even today, there's forks in the road. You can do an independent film, or you can go to Europe and make a gazillion dollars singing. So what are you going to do? I'm going to do something that is going to make me grow as a as an artist, and therefore as a person. And also, I'm a God person. I believe in a higher power, so I do pray, and I do try to listen to that inner voice. There was nobody that thought I should do Charlie Brown. Everybody thought I should do Annie Get Your Gun with Bernadette, who was, by the way, my idol, is my idol. So to be offered a show with your idol in a part where you'd be featured against a show that has six people and they're not even sure what part you're going to play. Everybody, of course, is going, hello, Annie, get your gun, job security. But there's this voice in me that said, you've got to try this over here. I have, to this day, cannot tell you why it just was my voice saying, do that. Same with Millie and Kristen. Kristen, in some people's eyes, was a bomb. But to me, it was a personal triumph. I'd never been on television. I needed to do it.
And we should say she won the Tony for Charlie Brown, so obviously that was a good decision.
Thank you.
Wicked. There's so much that could be said about it. You know, we see so many shows open on Broadway. They're a blockbuster, then they go away. You know, In the Heights was big, and now we're on to something else, West Side Story.
Yeah.
As you mentioned, this show, my husband, who I didn't know was into musicals, was like, I want to go to Wicked for my birthday.
A straight man. The best.
Woohoo! You can thank him. He's right there. But
Wait, is it him?
Yeah, it was him.
Thank
but
you.
But what is it about that show that you think has become so entrenched with not just little girls, but people across all categories love it?
Well, first of all, I just have to say I love that about your husband, because I had this, like, trucker guy, like, total. He's like, hi, I just want to say that I saw you in Wicked, and it was very moving. I was like, the first step is admitting it. Just cracks me up. Okay, first of all, a little tidbit that I think I write about in the book. I hope I did. I'm so tired. I've been in so many different places, I don't know if I've written it or not. I'm so tired. But when I first signed on to do the workshop of Wicked, the story was very much between Fiero and Elphaba, the Green Witch, and the guy. And when Stephen Schwartz called and said, hey, I've got this part for you in mind, I thought, oh, I've just done 13 episodes of the big hit Kristen. I'm so tired. Send it to me. I'll read it. I read it, and I said, okay, what time is the thing? I'll go. Because I knew it was special. And he said, well, I've written this song for you. It's called Popular. And I was like, okay. So I listened to it, and I was like, okay, yeah, I like it. So we did the workshop, and Elpha and Glinda had one scene. And she was just kind of like the nemesis, and then she went away. And I was like, perfect. I could, like, go have a cig, have a coffee. I don't smoke. I'm kidding. But, like, easy job. Then the audiences that would come would be like, hello, we like the Elphaba Glinda story. So it grew and grew and grew into the show that you see today. And it wasn't, somebody said, I bet it's because, online they were like, I bet it's because Kristen insisted on having a bigger role. She just won the Tony. Please, I wanted a break. But what I think people love about it is it's a show about unacceptance, judgment, friendship, forgiveness, and love. And I think the love story is between the two women, and I don't think we see it very often. I think each of us at one point in our lives has felt like the outsider. And yes, I was the dork in Broken Arrow listening to Judy Garland while everybody else was listening to Madonna. You know, so I, in my own way, was Elphaba. And a lot of people go, yeah, right. It's true. So I think it enabled me to play all the layers that Glinda required, which is, by the way, the reason she acted the way she did before she grew into the Glinda that we know and love is because she was insecure. So.
Yeah. You've been asked before about your relationship with Idina Menzel. Everybody insisted that there must be some rivalry between these two women. You say that's silly, but I want to ask you a different question.
Sure.
Is there a difference in theater in what you see when two women are competitive in a show and the way two men are competitive? Do they show it in different ways?
Oh, my God, that's a great question. You're so smart. You're so good. You should follow me to Oklahoma and then back to L.A. Yes, women can be more vicious. I'm just going to say it how it is. They can be undercutting. From the South, we're like, oh, my gosh, have you thought about getting a different hair color? Everything is done with a smile. And then, bless her heart. Oh, my God, she has a limp. Bless her heart. Oh, my God, she has a big old fat wart on her nose. Bless her heart. My assistant's like, shut up. Men are more like, hey, dude, yeah, yeah, I was just in Canada. That's for that same part you were. Yeah, that's crazy, right? Yeah, and they're all surfacey, too. But it's a little bit more done in a more jovial, kind way. And I never understand why women have to compete with women. We're all different. I was in pageant. I was in Miss Oklahoma pageant, and then I was in the Miss Pennsylvania pageant. And what I learned through it is that you have to compete with yourself. You can't compete with Joe Blow or Susie Q. You have to compete with yourself. You can offer what you have and hope that that's what they want. But yeah, women can be, I'm not going to lie, women can be vicious. And I'm sure that I have said something, not even meaning to, in a way, and a woman has taken it in a way like, because also we women, we look for things. Did you hear what she said? That was so rude. And your friend that's with you is like, I don't think she meant it that way. And you're like, are you deaf? So, you know, we all have to just calm down.
You write quite a bit about being a person of faith, being a Christian. And so first of all, I want to ask you, what does that mean in your day-to-day life?
Well, I believe, everybody calm down, that Jesus, I've invited him into my heart to be the savior of my life. Therefore, I can be forgiven for my sins. I believe that. That's what I believe. Now, I also don't believe that if you don't believe like I am, that you're going to the burning fires of the depths of hell. That is also what I believe. The faith that I have has carried me through to this point, sitting in this chair. There are many times I have felt alone, and I have the best mom and dad in the world. I have the best friends in the world. But let's face it, sometimes you got to go through things alone. You got to do it alone. You can't. I mean, have you ever had a friend say to you, I can't help you anymore. You have to go through this alone. You have to figure it out by yourself. But I always have the feeling that I'm not alone. And that's the best way that I can describe my faith. And I'm really thankful for it because there was a time, you know, growing up in the Bible Belt, there's lots of things that I don't believe anymore. That, as the way I was raised, like I believe in rights for all people, sexual orientation, everything. I believe that. A lot of my fellow Christians do not. I don't judge them for it. That is what they believe. But that is not what I believe. So judgment equals bad.
Well, you yourself found yourself judged between two communities you were trying to make happy. You go on the 700 Club to promote an album, thinking, I'm just going to talk about my album. Your gay community is like, how could you go into the pits of hell to talk to that guy?
Yeah.
And then when you try to explain it, the Women of Faith tour that you wanted to join pretty much fired you.
Yeah.
How did that experience change your relationship to those two communities?
Well, it's true that I do have a lot of, the gay community has embraced me. It hurt me because my very best friend is gay. And I would hate to hurt the gay community itself, I was more concerned about what I had done to if my friend Denny was hurt. He said to me, I think you might want to rethink that decision. And I was like, oh, shut up, please, please. I'd never seen the show. I'd heard Pat Robertson or something, but he didn't do the interview, and I was there to talk about my album. Would I do it again? No. I mean, when I drove in and saw the sign said Lynchburg, I probably would have. That might have, maybe that should have been red flag. But anyway, I wouldn't do it again, but I can't apologize for it because I did do it. And I was there to talk about my record. At the same token, the Women of Faith, a wonderful, wonderful organization that I still love. I had played Annette Bening's lesbian lover in Running with Scissors, the movie Running with Scissors, and that came out at the same time. And they were like, you can't be a part of us. And I said, then you have to fire me because I'm not going to quit. And they said, okay, you're fired. So it was a very tricky, that thing I was talking about before about being alone? I felt very alone because I felt like my own kind was like, we reject you, and then the people that had grown to love me reject. So that was hard. But what it did was force me to really say to people, and I didn't mean, I'm just this girl from Broken Arrow. I didn't want to be like the controversial Christian, but it forced me to say what it is I truly believe. And what my purpose in this world is to say, I just go by what Jesus taught, and that is love one another. That's what I, whether you believe in him or not, that's a great message. So.
In reading some of the stories about you, people are quick to point out that you're a Christian. It's kind of like, oh, Kristen, she has a sixth toe. Oh, Kristen, there's this other oddity about her. Do you feel
she
like
has
after,
a horn
yeah,
somewhere in the
after everything you've accomplished, is that still there, or they've gotten over that?
No, it's still there. I was just, I was on the Tonight Show not long ago with Jay Leno. Hello, it's a show. With Bill Maher, and although we're very different in personality. He just said, I don't believe in God. I could never, blah, blah, blah. And yeah, I know that you're that Christian girl. And I said, oh, I could get you to believe in God. And he got down on one knee, actually, after that. But, yeah, I never expected to be this girl. Like, yes, I'm a Christian, but, like, I'm not big love, you know? I don't walk around with my hair in a bun. And if you do, that's fine, too. Be careful what I say.
To give you a sense of just how Christian she is, the book, there's an opening scene. She's on a flight with a witchy flight attendant, and she asks for her name. I'd be asking for the name to curse her out by name or to turn her in by name. And she says, I want to pray with you for you. And the woman says, I don't need you to pray for me. She's like, oh, honey, I'm about to talk to the Lord about you specifically.
I did, too.
Okay. And let's talk a little bit about love. You talk about various people that you love in the book, but clearly the person your heart seems to favor is Aaron Sorkin, the writer. And he writes a lovely passage about meeting you.
At least we know one chapter's good.
And you kind of say when this book comes out, I have no idea where we'll be. Talk a little bit about both him and where you are. And in the book, you're pretty clear you would love to find your person and have that part of your life come to life.
Well, I mean, I don't think any of us sets out to be single for the rest of our lives. I was the little bit of the runaway bride in my 20s and 30s. And all of a sudden, like, I met Aaron when I was 36. I'm now 40. And I fell madly in love with him. He had offered me a role on The West Wing before Wicked, and it was another fork in the road, the role of Ainsley Hayes, if anybody knows that part. And I decided to do Wicked. And I'd never met him. And then he saw Music Man that I did with Matthew Broderick on TV. And he wrote me a letter and said, I just was so moved by your performance. I'm going to write a role. I want there to be a part for you on the show. And then he exited West Wing under very difficult circumstances. He had a drug problem and had to go take care of himself. And John Wells, who took the show over when I left Wicked, came out to do this another huge hit, Bewitched movie. And he said, would you like to do a drama? John Wells, who does ER and West Wing. And I said, yeah, I would, because no one would expect me to. And he said, we want you to do the West Wing. We've got a part. So West Wing came back around again. And then when Aaron found out, he sent me flowers. And the card read, just my luck, I'm not on the show anymore, but you are. And then he asked me to dinner, and we went to dinner, and I remember walking out of the hotel, and I didn't know what he looked like. I just never saw what he looked like, and I thought, oh, I hope that's Aaron Sorkin, and it was. And there is, we are not together, but there is something between us that just is, that we meet on an intellectual level. Not that I would even compare myself to being as smart as him, but I do think that I challenge him in ways that he hasn't been before. And he does the same with me. And lots of ups and downs in the relationship, but it was a chapter in my life that it was very special, and I will always love him.
And speaking of chapters, at some point your managers say to you, you know, you're fish and fowl. People don't know if you're TV. They don't know if you're stage. Where are you now and what do you want to do next?
I just finished a new, after Pushing Daisies, I was really not into doing another TV show for a bit. But David E. Kelley sent me a script entitled Legally Mad. And he said, there's this part I've written with you in mind and kind of for you, and I hope you like it. And there's another genius. So I read it. It's the role of Skippy Pylon. And she is the smartest lawyer, idiot savant in the law firm, and also bipolar. And should be medicated. And I was like, and you thought of me. But we just wrapped the pilot. We're waiting to see if we get on the air, and it'll be on NBC. And then, of course, we have Sit Down, Shut Up this Sunday night on Fox.
Okay. Great. Well, I've got one last question that I will save till the very end. But for now, I think for the next 15 minutes, we will take your questions. So I think there are people with microphones. Raise your hands, and I will leave it up to the people with the microphones to grab people out of the crowd. I think let's go for the woman in the middle in the yellow shirt. She beat the two of you.
Hi.
Hi.
Okay, well, I've been, like, a big fan of yours, like, forever. Like, I remember being little and watching you and Annie. Like, Lily was my favorite character.
Well, how old are you now?
Like, I'm 15. Like, when I was, like, really little, I remember, like, watching you.
Okay.
What does it feel like having, like, all these little girls where you're their hero and, like they grow up and you're, like, still, like, their hero? Like, what's that like for you?
Well, when I see a face like yours, it makes me so happy. It just makes me feel like I must be doing something right. And also, I had those people. You know, I had the people that I looked up to, and what I really want to do is not screw up and do something to embarrass you guys. So I try real hard to remember when Playboy calls, you know what? So your little face pops into my brain. Thank you so much.
Let's get the gentleman towards the back in the red shirt. Why don't you stand up, sir? Yeah. Hold on. They're going to bring you a mic so everybody can hear your question.
To the left, the mic is coming to the left.
Hi, you were already off of Wicked by the time I finally saw it, but I have the recording and you're really great. And,
Thank you.
The first 10 seconds of Popular, I always laugh when I hear your voice.
Good.
And you were my favorite part of Pushing Daisies.
Thank you.
This is kind of an odd, and Allison loves Snuggies too.
I love the Snuggies.
I have kind of an odd question. I'm also a big Aaron Sorkin fan, and I loved his Studio 60 show,
yes,
which didn't last very long.
No.
And Harriet really reminded me a lot of you. And I was curious if you were at all inspired her character.
Yes. We write about it in the book, actually. Yeah, he came to me and said, would it be okay if I had a character loosely based on you? And I said, yeah, as long as it's loosely. And I was honored that I was in any way a muse or an inspiration for him. And there's lots of ways that Harriet and I are different, but, you know, when you see an argument that you had on screen for millions of people to see, it's a little strange. But, of course, I was honored to, yeah, that was me. But not totally.
Let's grab one of these ladies here on the towards the wall.
Hi, you're one of my heroes too.
Thank you.
What was one thing that you would recommend to aspiring actresses?
I get asked this question a lot, and I never change my answer. So if it sounds a little canned, I'm sorry. It is this: if you can see yourself doing anything else, and being happy, by all means, go and do it, because this career is filled with lots of rejection, lonely. Sometimes I can go sing for 10,000 people in a concert and go home to my hotel and have chicken noodle soup by myself. So, you know, you have to work hard. You have to compete with lots of people who are more talented than you are. But if you can see yourself doing nothing else, absolutely nothing else, and being happy, then you should go for it. And you should never let anybody tell you that anything that you have about yourself that's different is bad. Look at me. I mean, look at me. I'm 4'11". I have a very interesting speaking voice. And, you know, in the Broadway show Still Pier, they were looking for a tall chorus girl to play this girl, this part named Precious. And in I walk. And I got it. So you never know. And you just, that voice I was talking about, You have to listen to that. So if you can see yourself doing anything else and being happy, go do it. And go do theater and stuff on the side. But if you can't see yourself doing anything else, go for it.
There's a young woman in a white shirt back there. And while we're getting back to her, I wanted to ask, you've got such an incredible voice. I was thinking, anytime you hear somebody else sing, you must be like, I can do better than that. But is there anybody whose singing blows you away?
Oh, my God, so many people. I'm loving that guy on American Idol right now, Adam Lambert. But, you know, I also like Placido Domingo. I also like Eminem. I really do. I like Alison Krauss's voice. I like Ava Cassidy, who's no longer with us, if you ever... She's one of my favorites. I like Anna Netrebko's voice. She's an amazing opera singer. So those are kinds of the people that kind of blow me away. But, you know, I've been in the subway before, and there's this one guy I heard one time. I'm not kidding. And I'm like, I just sat there, and I was so mesmerized by his voice. I never saw him again. I think about him all the time. I'm like, you could have been something. Like, you're in the subway. What happened? What happened to you? And also, I'm like everybody else, Britain's Got Talent, Susan Boyle blew me away. You know why? You know why I liked her? Because I've heard that song 1,000 times, and I've heard it better, frankly. I've heard it worse. She was amazing vocally, but, I mean, her heart. That's what Miss Birdwell was talking about when she said, I'm going to teach you how to sing from here, not just here. So, you know, I'm now on that train. Lots of people inspire me, and also not everybody has the best voice who inspires me. I mean, there are better voices than Gwen Stefani, but I love her. Okay.
All right. It was a young lady right there in the white shirt that I think you were going to go back to on this side. Oh, I'm sorry. You gave it to her. We'll come to you next.
Okay. The first thing I saw you in was Annie when I was really young. Loved you. But then when I realized it was you and Wicked in Annie, fell in love with you even more.
Thank you.
Watching Pushing Daisies, my sister says you are the greatest character ever. She fell in love with you there.
Thank you.
And then realized you're in Annie and Wicked. Anyway.
I love that people are like, because I don't want to be typecast. I like to play different parts.
You have different parts. I like that.
Yeah. Thank you.
My question is what's it different? Is it different performing on Broadway and TV and then also seeing you on Broadway and TV? Like, what is that feeling? Like, the difference between the two?
Well, there is a difference in that here's the difference. I hate to use this term, but I call it the dial. And I dial it up for the stage because I want the guy in the back row, back there asleep, I want him to really see what I'm talking about, and I want him to feel what I'm trying to say. And when I sing, I want him to hear it. But when I'm on TV, I want him to feel what I'm trying to say, and I want him to hear it. So it's a little bit less. But it all comes from the same place, because singing is acting. Speaking, they're speaking, and then they're singing, which is an extension of who we are. We sing because we can't speak anymore. And then we dance because it's another expression. So it's all from the same place. It just has to be dialed down for the television. But when you're doing something like Lily St. Regis in Annie, which is very, very animated, she's a bigger-than-life character. It's a very fine line to cross for television. So it was fun for me to find her with Rob Marshall's help, the director. So it's a challenge. All of it is a challenge to me. I like being on stage the best because I like the interaction. Like even today, I like what you guys are saying to me and what I'm saying to you. Like it's a give take. I like that.
Young lady on the right side in the white shirt. Why don't you stand up so she can see you?
Hi.
I just wanted to know. When did you know, like for sure, that you wanted to act and perform for the rest of your life? Like, when did you know?
Well, a lot of people don't know that what I really wanted to be was a ballerina. I really wanted to be a ballerina, but I was never going to be... I don't have the feet. The feet need to be like, that's your point. I have flat feet. And I was never going to be tall enough. And let's face it, these babies get in the way. Come on. I'm not built right. But I did really, that's what I wanted to be. I studied it 24/7. When I was 7 years old, I was in a production at Tulsa Ballet Theater in the Nutcracker, and I was too short to play a mouse. The mice were, they acted and they got to go around and dance. They were parts of two rabbits. One of them has to sit next to Clara and act too like this the whole time. I got that part. So the Sugar Plum Fairies come out. I'm sitting there. They come out and do their dance with the vines. One of the girls drops her vine. They go off. There's all this scuttlebutt in the wings of how are we going to get this vine? Because in dance, a bobby pin can ruin a character. I mean, ruin a career. You don't want anything on the floor. They could fall, trip, hurt themselves. And I knew this. And I remember thinking in my head at 7, I mean, and it's Tulsa Ballet is like, it's like our professional dance. It's huge. There was like thousands of people in our performing arts center. It's our professional place. And I remember it's like right before Christmas, and the car's packed. We're going to go to the country. They're waiting. My brother's in the audience asleep. And I see this vine, and I think, what would a bunny do? So... hopped back. And at the Tulsa Ballet Theater, I got a standing ovation. And by the way, in ballet, it's so snooty. It's like opera. Nobody claps. Nobody. They're like, that was lovely. They leapt to their feet, and I was like, I think I'm gonna like it here. I mean, that was it. All right. That was it.
Okay. Yes, you saw me getting the gesture for one more. I've gone to so many young ladies, I think I'm going to go with the guy in the red shirt in the middle there for the last question. You, I'm pointing to you. There you go.
There's confusion.
Hi, Kristen.
Hi.
I've seen you a bunch of times on Broadway. You're awesome. About 2 years ago, it was reported in the press that you had been signed to a development deal to do a movie on Dusty Springfield. Mm-hmm. And I always thought... a British lesbian with a deep voice, that was intriguing that they thought of you. What has become of that project?
Well, you haven't heard me at night.
That's true.
Actually, I thought of it. It was my idea. And I was insomnia one night, and they were doing the biography on Dusty. And I thought... there's a petite blonde who's battled her sexuality, her spirituality, and nobody knows her story. I want to play that part. And then we went to Universal, and they're like, yep. So we're working on the script. The good news about Dusty is I won't do it till it's perfect, because I'm a type A personality and perfectionist, crazy person. So the script isn't right yet, and until it gets there, the good news is I'm not probably going to age out of that for a while. I look younger than my age, and that helps me. So I can wait a year or two.
All right. Well, we're almost done. I reserve the last question for myself. In the book, you're playing at Opryland. You go to make a split. You don't quite make it. You fall on your groin. And you say, one good thing came out of that. You say, I can tell the weather with my hoo-hoo. And you guys can figure out what the hoo-hoo is. And I just have to say, we're expecting rain tomorrow. The Phillies are playing at 1:30. Anything you want to tell us?
I believe that you're referring to the Cooter Smash.
Yes.
It's where you kick your leg. I used to be double jointed, and not anymore. And I kick my leg, and then you fall into the split with your leg still attached to your head. And they had just waxed the floor at Opryland, and what hit first was my coccyx, and I cracked it. And so, yeah, exactly. And so, yeah, I've never been the same. I can tell the weather down there. No, I don't think there's going to be rain.
You heard it here first. AccuWeather. Kristen Chenoweth.
Thank you for listening to a podcast from the Free Library's Author Event Series. If you live in Philadelphia or are planning a visit and would like to attend an author event, Information is available at freelibrary.org.